You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m. Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Wednesday, 7 January. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you loud and recorded from the MoneyWeb offices in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Bastienta Khiba, he's the Chief Investment Officer at Prescient Investment Management, talking around the positive sentiment shifts in South Africa. Green shoots, they are real, they are tangible, but how risk-free are they? And what about global risks? Those certainly seem to be increasing. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Bastien Torhiba, Chief Investment Officer at Prescient Investment Management. Bastien, appreciate the time. If I look at 2025 and keeping it local initially, it really feels like a turning point for South Africa. And there are risks still out there, but we got off the grey list. We got an S&P upgrade. We got a new inflation target. Inflation is, you know, down almost 3%. We've got rates down 1.5%. It really does feel like a bit of a game changer of a year.
Thanks for having me on your show, Simon. And I won't disagree with that. You're spot on. I guess a lot of positive events, which came, like one after the other over the last couple of months, which is really exciting for South Africa. And markets have reacted. You could see that risk premium compressed. Our bond yields are now much lower. Our equities are stronger. Our currency is stronger. And onwards and upwards from here. But obviously, as we know, markets move in cycles and there's always other challenges around.
Absolutely. And I mean, we, as you say, we are seeing it in the yields and the like, but there has been tangible repricing, but it doesn't mean we're out of the woods. The S&P upgrade, which, I mean, there was a sense we might get the upgrade. We did. We also got a positive outlook, which I think certainly caught a lot by surprise. And to be clear, Moody's did not give us the upgrade. But this really does sort of, there's a big impact to this. Help us understand the real impact on this and the sort of improved fiscal credibility of our Treasury and government.
Yeah, 100%, Simon. I think we must acknowledge that the last budget was incredibly strong, incredibly market-friendly. I think the most market-friendly budget which we have seen in years. Mm-hmm. And it just speaks to the political will and the commitment which our government is showing right now. So they're trying to get things right and they're trying to attract foreign flows. And that's all the right stuff. So they seem to be on a good wicket here. In terms of the rating upgrade, the important part when it comes to the rating upgrade is that ratings, if you look at the data historically, often have a lot of autocorrelation. So as soon as you move in the right direction, after one upgrade, there might be another one eventually. And remember, we're not too far away from this investment grade status, which would still be quite a journey to get there, but it's not out of reach anymore. So yeah, two or three good steps from here and we might actually get there.
An investment grade status is a biggie. I mean, we've been, and the colloquial phrase is junk, but I mean, as I understand, there will be fund managers globally who won't even look at us because we're sub-investment grade. If we get back into investment grade, we pop up on a lot more radars. They might not invest in us, but they potentially will. We have that opportunity, which we don't have right now.
Most definitely. So what would happen is that you become part of the World Government Bond Index again, which is an index where you want to be on because exactly as you said, Simon, you will end up on the radar of many, many asset managers again, and that will increase our capability to attract flows and to bring our yields even lower. Having said that, when we got downgraded and we basically moved off the World Government Bond Index, the impact was quite muted. So I think the reality is that markets are actually much more forward-looking than these ratings themselves. But it's still a good confirmation that we are moving in the right direction.
Yeah, nice to have. You might not see a tangible immediate impact, but a nice to have. I want to touch on the 3% inflation target. It was a little bit weird. We had the MPC talk around 3% anchoring, and that was a careful choice of word. Medium-term budget policy statement, the minister came out and said, yep, it's going to be 3%. We've got 1% either side. I look at that and I think to myself, this is a really, really big issue for the country in a good sense. I mean, low inflation is always good, but this is a really, really big macro story for South Africa.
100%. We think amongst all these positive events which you've just mentioned, Simon, I think this is the biggest one because it really creates a lot of macroeconomic stability. It removes the uncertainty which we had to price for when it comes to the inflation outlook. If you think about our government bonds as an example, there's very little default risk. The risk would always be that there's runaway inflation. And the commitment to rein in inflation ever more and to make sure that the target is now at an even lower level, that's very, very positive. And we've seen it directly in the reduced inflation risk premium. So that reduced uncertainty is already priced into the market now, and it's all positive. So yeah, I think that's a massive step. And there's also precedence. There's a lot of other examples from other emerging markets where similar exercises have been done and where we had very good outcomes. So we're quite excited about this one, 100% agreed.
And our Reserve Bank and the MPC, it has the credibility. It's one thing to say this is a target, but we have, 20 years, 25 years of having an inflation target. We do have an MPC that can have that credibility that says, yeah, we will do our best and we will largely keep within it.
100%, we do have the credibility. That's great news. But having said that, Simon, I would never see our Reserve Bank and our inflation target as one of the core political risks in our country anyway. So if you want to really spin the story around. So, but you're right. They're known to be one of the best and most reliable reserve banks in the world. Just think about COVID. During COVID, inflation was much more elevated in many, many developed markets, while it was actually quite well controlled here in South Africa. So, yeah, I think we have earned ourselves that right to call our central bank very, very strong, and I wouldn't disagree with that at all.
Yeah, I was actually looking at some inflation charts. We didn't get to 8%. The US got above 9. I think the UK got above 11% at one point.
Yes.
And we, as I said, didn't get to 8. Let's look forward to 2026, and we've been patting ourselves on the back, deservedly so. There's a lot about 2026 out there. You put a recent note out. You talk around 4 structural risks building in global markets. Talk me through these concerns you have, these risks that are out there.
Yeah, so I think it's good to always look back into 2025 and then in that context to look forward to 2026. So when we started into 2025, we had, especially when we look into South Africa, we had underpriced equities, underpriced bonds. Mm. We had an economy globally, which was quite strong, not too late in the cycle. We had a lot of, negative sentiment around South Africa, which is good because it enabled the sentiment to turn into positive. Yeah. And then also financial conditions, we knew that we would enter a quite steep cutting cycle. If we look into where we are now, all of that has kind of turned, right? So basically what we're saying is valuations are not cheap anymore. The economy is much later down in the economic cycle, so late stage economic cycle globally. And then from a confidence point of view, all of this good news, which we have just been speaking about, Simon, that's now all in the price. Mm. And we can measure that. And with that, obviously, there's less room for sentiment to improve. So yeah, I do think that with all the optimism around South Africa, which is completely justified, I do think that 2026, the starting point is just a much tougher one.
I get your point in that. It is a tougher one. And it does mean, we've had spectacular returns locally, most of that driven by precious metals, but nonetheless, we've had really, really good returns out of the US, a lot of that AI driven, but again, not exclusively. Even Europe, the UK markets have done well. And it does put us in a precarious place. The short answer is, it would be surprising if we repeated it again, I suppose, is the honest answer. We should expect, at best, probably lower returns.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we'd like to approach this topic as everything quite scientifically. So just the mere fact that the market has had a good run doesn't mean that it can't have another good run. But there are certain metrics which you can apply which tell you about the complacency or the lack of concern, if I may call it like that, of market participants. And we like to look into option pricing, which is basically the price which market participants pay for protecting against downside risk. And if you do that, the willingness to pay for downside protection right now is next to nothing. So with that, whatever happened in the price levels over the last 12 months, ignore that. We can physically measure that the pricing of uncertainty is extremely low. And that speaks to a very, very complacent market. And that normally does not bode too well when it comes to forward-looking returns.
And that's a great point. And that's one of the core themes that at Prescient is a sort of a systematic and an evidence-based process rather than, I don't know, running on the gut. There is data out there that you can collate and use to help tell the story.
That's exactly right. We use obviously a lot of data, almost a billion data points every day.
Wow.
And with that, we do try to have that information advantage in the information age, which you need to create outperformance. And if we pull it all together in a very disciplined and rigorous, like a very disciplined and robust way, let me call it like that, then you will get exactly to that conclusion that a lot of the factors which have predictive power were looking very attractive at the beginning of the year, but they have kind of worn off because markets adjusted and now forward-looking, it's just going to be slightly more headwinds.
To change track slightly, Federal Reserve, they've also been in a rate cutting cycle. The market is almost thinking that in 2026, they're just going to be handing out, 0.25% rate cuts, I don't know, almost left, right and center. And that must be a concern. I mean, there is a risk that at some point the Fed says, they've had inflation above target now for 5 years.
Yeah, they had inflation above target. I will agree with that. Having said that, we don't think that inflation is going to be the worry for the year to come. We actually think that the growth concerns will dominate. And with that, the Fed should be cutting. Mm-hmm. The question is more how forward-looking is the Fed? And the impact of monetary policy is obviously very delayed. So until we hit the real economy, it takes something like 12 to 18 months after a cutting cycle. So with that, we are worried that they are too late and that the cutting is too shallow. So if what you said, there will be a lot of quarter percentage point cuts, we would actually encourage that. Or let me rephrase that, we would think that that is needed to keep the US economy or the global economy with that going. So hopefully we see those cuts coming. That would be important.
It is the concern because, of course, the Fed has a dual mandate. They've got price stability, inflation. They've also then got jobs. And certainly, I mean, Jerome Powell mentioned it at Jackson Hole, where he said our focus is now on jobs. And we are certainly seeing some signs of weakness in the labor market in the US.
Yeah, 100%. I think you understated the issue there. If you look into inflation from our point of view, there is very little to be concerned about. It's just one or two areas which are driving inflation, and inflation stands on very, very weak footing, so to say, to really be demand driven, and we don't see that materializing in the years to come. But what is really concerning is that job market, which you just quoted. Mm-hmm. So that job market is looking pretty dismal, if we are honest. And there's a lot of pace added to the rate at which the unemployment rate is going up. Non-farm payroll reports are also quite poor. There's almost no new job creation. So speaking about this labor market this cautiously, as Jerome Powell did, we don't agree with that. We think the US economy is in a much weaker state than what he makes it.
If we take, and you've said already, the good news is into the market, and that obviously adds risk to it. There's some complacency. You see that in the option data. Is US the primary sort of global risk to the economy, or are there sort of other concerns out there? China, we still got war in Europe, of course. I mean, are there other risks that are on the radar?
There's always plenty of risks, obviously, Simon. I mean, obviously, in emerging markets, there's challenges. And as you rightly said, in Europe, there's a war. And not just the war, but also like the consumer confidence and the lack of an ability of European companies to compete with a more competitive economy in China, et cetera, et cetera. So there's many, many issues around the globe. The reason why we speak so much about the US and why we like to focus on the US is because that is really the engine room of the global economy, right? So if you want to understand the business cycle, you still have to look at the US first. And that's why we also focused on that. But are there other risks out there? Certainly, unfortunately, there's always many, many risks.
I take your point. We are a world full of risks, but the US is sort of the linchpin. It's a quarter of global economy. It's 75% of global stock markets. We'll leave it there. Bastien Tachiba, Chief Investment Officer, Prescient Investment Management. Appreciate the time. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with StanLib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
That's it for today. This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're here every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobokle, Seren, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Transnet, how did we get into this mess? And is it really turning around?
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.